From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of May 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. We'll have a discussion with Scott Irwin, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, about the article he penned this week looking at the impact of late planting on corn yield. There's that FarmDoc Daily article, and it is really good. And Scott gives us an in-depth look at what's behind the weather model and how to use it as we make our way through this month of May and into June. And then, as we round out our time together, we'll talk about the weather. We'll do that with Mike Tenura at T-Storm. It's tstorm.net online, right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, July corn for the day settled at $4.59¾, 9 cents higher. September at $4.67, up 8. And the harvest month, December, 6¾ at $4.79½. July soybeans up 28¾, $11.99 the settlement price. August $11.99½, up 27½. And November new crop at $11.87¾, 22¾ higher. Bean meal up $15.90. The bean oil 3 cents lower. The hard red winter wheat in the July 11½ cents higher. They settled $6.36½. And the soft red July contract settled at $6.04¼, up a nickel for the afternoon. Live cattle futures at $176.80, up $2.95. Feeder cattle at $255.22½, $3.47½ higher, and lean hogs at $99.92½ per 100 pounds, down 50 cents. The wholesale price of gasoline up about a penny and 6 cents at $2.59¼, and crude oil at $78.88 a barrel, down 12 cents on this Thursday afternoon. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net in Windsor, Illinois now joins us. Hi, Matt. Thank you for being with us. I suspect, like many other farmers in Illinois, you are wanting to be in the field, but it's just too wet at the moment.
Yeah, you know, last weekend we had 2 to 2½, 3 inches of rain, depending on where you farm, in the region that we're in. And so, you know, we were already, of course, trying to dry out. And unfortunately, we weren't able to do so. So, you know, these warm days are definitely making a big difference. There's no question. And so, you know, if we don't get any more rain by maybe Saturday, I would assume some folks might be trying to nose around a little bit on Saturday, at least by Monday. But, you know, of course, we've got rain forecasted. So hopefully maybe we miss one for a change.
Take a look at the marketplace in Chicago today. The soybeans rallied. Why?
You know, a couple things are going on. Of course, parts of Brazil, down in Rio Grande do Sul, you know, they had, some 24-hour rain totals that were 8, 10 inches. And so, all the beans aren't necessarily done, first of all. But second of all, the beans that, you know, haven't made it to port, you know, obviously there's some issues there. And so trying to get beans to port down there. And then, of course, in the U.S., obviously planting delays. You know, the Eastern Corn Belt is excessively behind pace. Illinois, of course, is behind as well. And Iowa's running right along pretty good, you know. But whether you're talking corn or beans, I do think that the funds are sitting here on these large net shorts. And my estimation today is somewhere in that 200,000 contract grain for corn, maybe 100,000 contracts short for beans. With that being the case, I think the funds are stepping in and saying, hey, you know, I don't know that we want to be this short going into the heart of the growing season. This hasn't been a perfect spring. And so I think the main thing that really got the market started would have been whenever the funds were exiting some of these shorts. You know, and you saw the July beans, for instance, go above the 50-day moving average. A ton of buying showed up. And so definitely nice to see these 25, 30-cent gains today.
Can there be some follow-through from this one-day rally so far?
I do believe there could be some follow-through. You know, I mean, as you know, I've always been more of a fundamental guy than a chart guy. But at the same time, I pay close attention to it. One of the guys on my team, Brian Split, you know, he beats him into our head pretty consistently. And You know, if you look at the chart, the 100-day moving average is up there, pushing 1240. And so, can you get a rally to something like that? Or you'd be actually above the 100-day. But bottom line is, the bean market has a chance, maybe with all this pent-up selling that we've seen. The funds, again, I do think that they're going to want to exit their shorts. They're not going to see the beans on the other side of them, like they'll see the corn on the other side of the equation, considering the farmer owns so much corn relative to what they own in beans for this time of year. And so, could we see some follow-through buying? Yeah, I do believe that we could see that. Regardless, though, producer has to understand, hey, yes, we could take a run another 20, 34 cents higher. It's possible, maybe even more than that. But how do we want to approach it? And I think that the way that we need to approach it is selling into a rally, whether we're talking old crop or new, at least some sort of risk management as this market rallies, because the kind of rally we're seeing on a day like Thursday is something that we haven't enjoyed for quite some time.
So you're a scale-up seller into this at what, 10% increments if you've not started or larger?
Yeah, I mean, if a person hasn't started yet, I would certainly get a little more aggressive than 10, maybe on my first go round if I know that I can be profitable. I think everyone's different. Looking at November beans, if July beans go ahead and make the kind of run that some people are projecting, then it's pretty reasonable to think that November beans could get up and above $12. Now, I got to think there'll be a fair amount of hedge pressure as you approach 12. But we're up 22 and three quarters today. So if you continue to see some strength like this, it's not that big of a hill to climb to get that no beans over 12. So I do think at that level, if I hadn't done anything yet, I'd probably be stepping in and sell at least 20%.
What about corn? Can it follow?
Yeah, I think the thing with corn, of course, is that it's not necessarily the date that all the corn's going to get planted. It's if it's a wet spring, people know that a lot of times it can pose some serious agronomic challenges, and so a lot of times your yield will suffer with a later planted crop. And so I've got to think that that's underpinning this market somewhat. The other thing, of course, that's underpinning the market is this massive managed money short position, which, like I said, was probably 200,000, maybe even a little bit higher than that. The thing is that if the funds decide that they want to go long due to the fact that the crop's challenged, they got to get rid of the short first. And so there's no doubt in my mind that corn could follow along. But again, I would say, it's going to be like a broken record for most people that follow me very much. I'd be selling into it more than getting bullish once the market gets to some of these levels we haven't seen in a while. So I would just be very cautious how I approached it.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Matt Bennett is with agmarket.net. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. The rainfall events this year have caused many to think about late-planted corn and what yield impact it might have for the 2024 growing season. As it happens, University of Illinois agricultural economist Scott Irwin began to work last fall on a weather model that incorporates a late-planting yield penalty. He wrote an article for the Farm Doc Daily website, and you may read it online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I asked Scott why he decided to put the weather model together.
There's kind of a quick and dirty way to approach some of these questions, like the trend yield on corn and soybeans and impacts of crop conditions, different weather. And it's okay as a first step to estimate these effects one by one. But we know that in truth, the right way to do it is you have to allow all these impacts to affect one another simultaneously. And that's why I knew I needed to finally bite the bullet. And I started last fall estimating what we call a crop weather model that includes all the important drivers in one model, and they're all working at the same time.
And so this model includes precipitation, even in the months, well, maybe it's a precipitator. I don't know whether it's precipitation from September to March. So the weather, when generally there is not a crop in the ground or it's not growing anymore. And then there's precipitation models for April and June and August, and temperature models for May and June and July and August. And they're all weighted. We won't go through the weights, but I do want to go through what the yield, trend line yield, you come up with when you use this model might be, because it is higher than what most might think of as the trend line yield.
You know, most of the time to get a trend line yield, we'll just run a straight line through a graph of yield versus time. And that's okay. There's a place for that. But we know that you can get a bias doing that because you're not at the same time conditioning on the weather. This is a big debate that's going on right now that, for example, since 2013, you know, if you just look at a plot of corn yields, it looks like the rate of growth in trend yields for U.S. corn have slowed down the last decade. But is the rate of genetic improvement and management improvement in corn in the U.S. really slowing down? Or could this be explained by just a run of poorer than average weather? The model I use says it's all poorer than average weather. And so the trend hasn't really changed over the entire period that I estimate the model, which I start in 1980.
And then to deal with late planting, in the first 5 years, you say late planting starts at May 30, and then from that point on, it's May 20. However, when you deal with this late planting, you come up with and this is surprising to me, a single number for every percentage of late planting that takes place. It's 0.35, or about 3.5 tenths of a bushel,
right,
per percent, correct?
That is correct. And so there's different ways to do this, and the USDA's model that they use does it a little bit differently. This goes way back to work that I did 15 years or more ago with Daryl Good, when we really think that the best way to reflect late planting in a model like this is what we call a cutoff variable. In other words, we know from the great work that our friends in agronomy do in terms of their field trial experiments to pin down optimal planting dates for corn, that sometime after about the 15th or 20th of May, you really start to hit the big penalties. And so we experimented years ago with various cutoff dates, and this sequence seems to fit the data the best. And so right now, any percentage of the corn crop planted after May 20th takes a, as you said, 0.35 bushels per acre hit.
So if I were to just want to use this model or the 0.35, could I take the weekly crop progress report after May 20th and start to apply it?
Absolutely. You could. I have examples in the article of how you could do that. For example, the trend yield that this model predicts for 2024 for U.S. average corn yield is 182.1 bushels per acre. Let's say you get to May 20th and the amount that's planted late is 28%, which is 10 percentage points higher than average. On average, we plant 18% of the crop past that date. It's very hard to get it all planted in the optimal window. And so since the 182.1 assumes average late planting, then it's the margin above or below average that would be used to adjust the 182.1. So in this case, if it came out at 28%, you're 10 points above normal, then you just take 10 times minus 0.35 or minus 3.5 bushels, and then you would just subtract the 3.5 bushels from the 182.1. I think that's 178.6. And then that's how you would do it. Of course, you know, right now people are looking at, you know, well, what kind of projection for late planting makes sense? You know, will it be 28%? Will it be 35%, 50%, or maybe it'll be average? That's a really difficult thing to project at this point in time, because there's 22 days between May 20th and our last observation on planting progress in the U.S. And that's a long time to try to project what late planting is going to be. I mean, the weather, as we know, can turn on a dime. We could still have a normal planting season, or we could have a really terrible planting season, more towards like 2019 or 2022. You know, it's all on the table at this point still.
But you're satisfied that the model prediction on the late planted portion of it works?
Oh, I argue that it all works. It's probably a reasonably good model. It's just that final yields are inherently difficult to predict with any statistical model. That's the point I want to make. The model is not perfect.
Okay, anything I didn't ask you that I should have?
I would just say at this point, despite how wet it is in Illinois, and it's wet right now, I think we have to be cautious about predicting a historical level of late planting like we had in 2019. It's just too early and too much can happen.
Scott Irwin is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, a member of the FarmDoc team. You can read his article on the FarmDoc Daily website or at willag.org. Look for the title, Further Evidence on the Impact of Late Planting. Mike Tenura, the president and CEO of T-Storm Weather, that's tstorm.net online, now joins us to discuss the global growing regions. Hi, Mike. Thank you for being with us. A lot of ground to cover at the moment. Planting rates and pace have been pretty good in the United States. However, there is a slowdown, I suppose, this week, and the question is how long that will continue on and off as we make our way through the month of May. What have you been watching?
Well, it's certainly going to become a challenge. It's actually one of the wettest springs of the last 10 years across the central U.S., with only 2013 having higher coverages of wetness on corn and soybeans at this point in the season. Now, as you noted, planting has been moving forward until recently, and the big question is, how much longer is this going to last? Well, we have a number of systems that are going to pass over the next week, so we're looking for widespread coverage of above normal rainfall for pretty much all corn and soybeans. Anywhere from 1.25 to 2.5 inches of rain is coming up over the next week. So that's going to keep things sluggish through the first 7 to 10 days of May. Once we get into next week and a little bit beyond that, this is where the forecast is dicey. We can see there's a number of systems that loom to the west, so automatically we have to forecast more rain 1 to 2 weeks out. But it's all those little details that are going to matter. If we see a system move through and produce a bunch of rain in the southern U.S., but not in the central and northern areas, well, then things would start to improve. But at this point, it's a little bit too early to try and pinpoint exactly where this is all going to set up. But I think the larger point to keep in mind, Todd, is that there are more systems out there. It is going to rain more after the next week is up. And so to suddenly transition into this fantastic planting season is pretty unlikely just based on the maps that we're looking at.
Now, as we're getting the growing season started here in the United States, the Brazilians and Argentines are in the midst or end of their growing season. What are conditions like today?
Well, the dry season is starting earlier than normal in Brazil, and that's going to have an effect on second crop corn. About 85% of that crop is going to receive no rain for the next 2 weeks and probably for the rest of its growing cycle. And it is a little bit late in the season, so this isn't like getting a drought in the start of June or something like that. It's more happening at the end of July and the start of August. But nonetheless, this lack of rain is likely going to prevent yields from going a lot higher from wherever they are today. And in fact, they'll probably start to turn around. So we'll need to keep an eye on exactly how all that pans out. Now, the weather forecast is clear. The yield impact is a little uncertain. The other thing to keep in mind, and this is just kind of a minor thing, but it is something worth noting, is that the very southern tip of Brazil has a state called Rio Grande do Sul, and it produces about 15% of their soybean crop. It's a full variety crop, so it's still being harvested now, with probably 1/3 to 1/2 of it still in the ground. They were pounded by heavy rain over the last 24 hours, and there's numerous rain events coming up because this upper level high is located to its north. That's what's keeping corn dry, but this southern tip is going to keep getting hit by wave after wave of rain. So that is certainly going to limit the end of the soybean cycle for Brazil with some harvest delays in that small area.
Turn your attention back to the northern hemisphere, but let's go to the Black Sea area. Russia, parts of Ukraine, service a large part of the wheat export across the planet. That means that crop is really important, and I believe in Russia they have been suffering really dry conditions.
Well, it's one of the drier periods that we have in our records. Now, admittedly, our records only go back 5 years, we've been tracking very precise crop data, but it's off the chart with the amount of rain that they have not seen because it's just been super dry. There's very little rain on the way over the next 5 days, and so the drought that's developed there is going to continue for a while longer. Once we get into Sunday and Monday and later next week, there are a few chances for rain here and there, but we're going to need some direct strikes of pretty heavy rainfall in these areas if we're going to get out of this situation. The more likely scenario is that you'll see some stabilization of the drought for the northern third of the crop where some of the rain chances are better. But then once you get into central and southern Ukraine, which is where most of those exports you talk about come from, that area is not going to see a whole lot of rain for the next 5 to 10 days and probably longer than that. So that drought story is not going to suddenly go away. It's going to be kind of in the background. At the same time, Eastern Ukraine is also being affected by this, but central and western Ukraine, where about two-thirds of wheat is produced, is doing okay. And most of the European Union is wet and maybe arguably too wet in some areas. So that situation is evolving, but it doesn't look real good for rain in Russia at the moment.
This reminds me that we should also check in on the hard red winter wheat growing regions of the United States.
Well, they're in a mixed situation because the central and eastern areas have been getting some okay rains this week, and they're going to see more going forward. So basically, two-thirds of the hard red winter wheat crop is going to be doing pretty great from a rainfall standpoint, despite having been fairly dry leading into the last week or two. It's that other area that we're concerned about, that other third of wheat. If you look at rainfall around Dodge City, Kansas, by just taking Dodge City, drawing a 75-mile radius circle around it, it's been the driest in more than 38 years by a pretty wide margin over the last 30, 60, and 90 days. Now, it did rain overnight, so that number will diminish a little bit, but it's been the driest since before 1986 in this key area. And the rain chances in this western region, where about 33%, again, of that wheat crop is produced, it's going to see a little rain coming up tomorrow night and Saturday, maybe a little bit more next week. But for the most part, that intensely dry wheat is going to stay much drier than normal for a while. And that's kind of where the problem lies. You know, you'll see some good rains for, you know, at least half the crop, but then this other area is not going to be doing so good. And in the end, you know, those two factors will be playing against each other.
Thank you much.
Yep, thanks for having me, Todd.
That's Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather. Joined us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org. Just click and play our programming right from the homepage, or if you hit the podcast tab there, you'll find ways to subscribe to the Closing Market Report Commodity Week, which we'll record and post later today, as well as the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy Podcast. There's a brand new episode of that one up as well. The theme music for this program, the Closing Market Report, is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.